It's Will Sean Podcast. The internet cried out for two more blowhards, and they courageously answered that call. Armed with the weapon of wit, each week they're joined by guests to discuss movies, television, pop culture, and anything else that's pissing them off. Take it away, boys.
I'm Will Link.
And I'm Sean David.
And this is Will Sean Podcast?
Not if you keep changing your goddamn Oscar picks, they won't. How you doing, Will?
Well, I had an incident earlier this afternoon that I feel I need to... That I was unaware of this happening.
Did you poop your pants?
No. It's nothing that I should be ashamed of. I was at the local pharmacy, and I needed to buy condoms.
Like you do.
Like you do, because, you know, I'm that way. I'm safe about these things. And they have them at this pharmacy that I was at behind, like a plastic case.
Yeah, it's like a bulletproof thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And on it, it says, alarm will sound when you lift. So I go, should I not lift it? Like, what's going to happen? So I go up to this guy who clearly didn't want to be bothered. This guy worked there. And I was like, how do I get this? He goes, you lift it up. I said, but an alarm will sound. He's like, yeah.
So everyone knows you're purchasing condoms?
Exactly. So they have this system, apparently, to alert the store when someone's buying condoms. So I pick the thing up and it goes, boop, boop, boop.
How fucking embarrassing.
I know. And I'm like, okay. And I took the condoms, which, by the way, maybe this says I was buying cheaper condoms before, but I feel they went up in price. Everything's gone up.
Were
in
they
price.
The Scooby-Doo ones?
I feel like I was used to get 12 in a pack, and then this pack had 10. And I'm like, what happened to the two extra condoms?
No, well, you know, these also, they have speed holes in them, so you got to be careful.
The point is, I don't think there should be a system where alarms sound when a man buys condoms. I just don't think that's right.
I was recently in a pharmacy, and I saw a friend of mine. I was walking down the aisle. I just go pick up a prescription, and I saw a friend of mine in the condom/lube/embarrassing part of the pharmacy aisle, and I just kept walking because I figured, okay, it's a female friend of mine. Then I went to go grab what I needed off the shelf, and then I went to go to the line to get my medication, and she was in line ahead of me. And as soon as she sees me, her face goes red. She's clearly embarrassed, and I could see her shift her entire body, and whatever it was she was holding, she cupped and kind of hid behind her. She goes, oh, hey, yeah, you can go ahead of me if you want. And I knew what was going on. I said, oh, okay, fine. And then after I finished getting my medicine, I just left because I didn't want to linger.
You didn't want to, yeah.
But then she texted me later apologizing for her strange behavior, and I told her, that's why you don't buy embarrassing shit at the neighborhood pharmacy. You got to go 5 towns over for that.
Well, speaking of embarrassing shit, what's going on in the world of Will Sean Podcast?
The typical embarrassing shit. Did we have a hiccup last week with the episode?
No.
No, okay.
Wait. No, we don't have a hiccup anyone knows about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Other than that, everything's going well. Guys, just keep liking us on Facebook. Tell people. You know what to do. We don't need to harangue you. It's 54 episodes in.
And if you like what you hear on iTunes, give us a star rating.
Exactly. We're getting you great guests. We're bringing you comedians. We're bringing you writers. I think we have yet to have a guest that, even if you don't like the guest, you're still entertained. So
exactly.
Spread the love. That's all we're saying.
So who's our sponsor this week?
Well, Will, these days we can't get enough good stuff in our chocolate bars. And why shouldn't we? Anyone knows that chocolate makes everything better. Introducing the Bagel and Lox chocolate bar. Inside each milk chocolatey bar is enough wild Baltic smoked salmon, hand-whipped cream cheese, and garlic onion and poppy seed bagel crumbs to choke your bubby. Bagel and Lox chocolate bars by Manischewitz, not kosher for Passover.
This, honestly, I've been waiting for a product like this.
It's everything you need. It's breakfast in a bar.
This holiday season, I'll be eating these.
Ugh, just thinking about it makes me nauseous.
Don't say that about our sponsor. On the show today, you're right, there might be some last-minute Oscar picks made. Also, we're going to have, we haven't had in a while, a little selection of Sean's Jewish History Corner.
By popular demand.
And, an enemy related to girls. And, first, before all of that, we were supposed to have her on, oh so long ago, Skype her in, but there was a hurricane and a blizzard, and it was all a big nightmare. But now we have with you, she's the editor-in-chief of U1Can, the website I talk about all the time on the podcast, Madeline Kessner.
Oh, hi!
Hello! How you doing over there?
I'm okay. I'm sitting in the darkness.
Is that because you still don't have power from Hurricane Sandy?
No, luckily we have power. I just, there's just no windows in this room.
So have you just been sitting there as the sun went down and you didn't bother to turn a light on?
No, there's no windows.
So there would be
never any light.
Are you in a basement?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I was never in a basement until my first basement I ever was in when I was 16 years old.
Because they don't have basements out here.
No, in Cleveland, Ohio. Yeah.
Long Island, they have. Because you're from Long Island. You're on Long Island.
Oh, man, you're giving away all my secrets right at the beginning of the show.
No, she's in the Trump Towers in Manhattan.
Yep, that's it. I'm in the basement of Trump Towers right now.
She's in the utility room.
Yeah, that's where I live.
Well, Madeline, we wanted to have you on a while back, and I think it might be better that it ended up waiting a little bit, because the website, You One Can, you've been making a lot of changes to it now. You've been doing some more work on it, so I think it might be better that we have you on now. I think it was meant to be that way.
Tell the people a little bit what You One Can is.
It's a kind of just a general cinema blog that we launched right at the end of 2011, and last year was mostly kind of my personal blog with a couple writers, and in the last 3 or 4 months we've brought on like a bunch of people. We're posting a ton of reviews and news and interviews and things like that, and Will is one of our best writers, in my opinion. Don't tell our other writers. Right now we're working on a whole redesign of the site. We're doing really well, and people seem to like it, so check out our website.
Now, what made you want to start a movie blog? Did you have an interest in film journalism, and if so, how did that develop?
Or did you lose a bet?
I lost a job, actually.
Ah.
I've been writing for different websites and magazines for years. I used to write for a site, which I actually got into them via their podcast, called Sound. It's Sound On Site, not Sight and Sound, but Sound On Site. And they had a podcast that I was a fan of, and then they were kind of moving into the like literary magazine direction. I wrote some film criticism for them, and it was fun.
And then I can do this.
Yeah.
Myself, I could have my own site like this.
Yeah, well, I wrote for Hari Yearbook for a while,
okay.
Which R.I.P. Hari Yearbook is deceased. I did a little bit for Bloody Disgusting. I wrote for Famous Monsters of Filmland for almost a year when I was out in Los Angeles, and then after all that, I'm like, well, I could do this and not have a boss.
There you go.
What you mentioned Bloody Disgusting and sites like that. You know, these are all genre sites. Was your mm-hmm. goal with You One Can to be more genre oriented? Like, how did you want to separate it from the typical film blog? Was that one of the ways?
We mostly just wanted to be really satirical about everything. Like, even the name You One Can is like, you don't win can. Can's a place. You win the Palme d'Or. So, like, that was... it was kind of just a mockery of people who are really pretentious about film. The kind of people who think that, like, winning a really prestigious award automatically makes a film good, and a film that can't win awards is automatically bad, which I think is a curse on, like, film fans.
Well, it's a good thing you're on our episode right before the Oscars, then.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. And trust me, when we start talking about Oscar films, my opinions are going to be just flat, because I don't like that stuff for the most part.
So give us an example. I mean, I know I've plugged some things that I've reviewed for your site on the show, and I've reviewed a lot of foreign stuff. I've reviewed a lot of stuff that maybe isn't in every cinema. But what are some of the films that have been reviewed or talked about? Give us some article examples.
Oh, all right. Man, you're putting me on the spot. Let me think. Oh, here we go. This is perfect. I recently wrote a article about the career of Neville Dean and Taylor. It's Michael Neville Dean and Brian Taylor. They're two filmmakers. They made the Crank films. They mm-hmm. made a movie called Gamer that I'm totally infatuated with. And people think that they're horrible. It's like, wow, this is really bad action movies. But
the Crank movies are brilliant.
Exactly. They're brilliant and they're great, and I don't think people should dismiss them because, you know, their action movies.
Where does Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance fit into all this?
Well, if you read my article, you at the end I talk a lot about it and how I think it's terrible and probably the worst part of their career, because it was the first time that they kind of stepped out of being the main... I mean, they directed it, they shot and directed it, but they didn't write it.
Right.
They didn't produce it. And that was always kind of their thing, is like they had complete control over their films and it was always in their world. And this is the first film that was out of their world and in the Marvel Universe, and it doesn't work.
Well, the first Ghost Rider doesn't work either. Those are both bad movies.
Yeah, but I don't care about that one.
No. Now, I also notice, I got to ask you this about the site. Because I notice, and I love the site, obviously. I talk about it every week.
You said something great once, which is, I love the site, but there's a lot of things about it that I don't understand.
And here is one of them. There is a writer on your site who is obsessed with the Vampire Diaries, the TV show.
That would be the co-founder, Greg.
He is obsessed. Now, here's the thing. I know that sometimes you want to talk about TV, and there's a lot of great, edgy television to talk about, Breaking Bad, you know, things like that. The Vampire Diaries doesn't feel like it fits into that. I mean, vampires, yeah, but it seems like a very...
soft show for teenagers.
Yeah, but, well, if you ask me, I side with you. I think that it is horrible. But if you ask Greg, it's a very complex mythology with a series of characters who are written to be relatable to young people, and he loves it. And I guess that's kind of what I want from the site, is I want anyone to be able to say that whatever the thing that they love is wins Cannes.
Okay, fair enough. And you
and
said...
I mean, it actually is a really popular feature on our site. Every week, Greg gets drunk and writes a very rambly review of the episode that includes like all of his like theories about the Vampire Diaries like world and where the show is going. And I edit it, and I don't understand a word of it, because he's right. It is a really complex mythology that is not like other vampires.
Is it as complex as the mythology on the Carrie Diaries?
I cannot answer that question, as my knowledge of the Carrie Diaries is zero.
Well, you know, it's drawing on the dense mythology of Sex and the City, so...
Really now? Would you say that the Carrie Diaries wins Cannes?
It can has cheeseburger.
I wish I was writing for your site when, like, say, Lost was on, because I would have written these... insane
3,000 word just like
articles each week.
And, and Maddie, I do owe you another article. My Fritz Lang article is languishing in a half written state, although I feel that the one article I contributed to you is far more earnest than your site allows for.
No, my site allows for anything. Come on.
It's true. It is a site that it takes a lot of content, and you're always looking for, like, if we have people out there who love film and are good writers and stuff, you're always looking for people to contribute, right? You're always
Oh, yeah, totally.
You pay handsomely, right?
What?
You pay handsomely, correct?
No, your payment is that like hundreds and hundreds of people are going to read your words.
And it's true, because many, many a person has read my Amore review.
Yeah, your Amore review, it will not quit. Like, every week, that's one of our most read articles.
And you wrote it a while ago. You saw that movie early.
I saw it in September, posted it early, and I think as the film came out and as it got more buzz...
Is it linked to on IMDb yet?
It is.
Now, what other things have you been personally up to?
Last weekend, I've been producing and doing some promotion for a television pilot that a good filmmaker friend of mine named Avi Schrader has been working on over the past year. And he raised a bunch of money for it. He got an amazing crew together, and they came and shot in my house, actually, last weekend. We shot a simulated porno.
Really?
Interesting. This is for a pilot?
Yeah, the pilot is called Fluff.
Ah.
And it is about a young guy who just can't really hold a job, and he just keeps getting fired from, like, every, job he's in just these really absurd ways and just starts taking work from anyone. And in the first episode, he gets work as a fluffer, but it's going to kind of follow him and his friends.
Now, is this a like, gay fluffer or a straight fluffer?
Straight, but...
Well, who's he fluffing?
He's fluffing a man.
So it's gay.
Yeah,
it's funny. Listen, I know like labels make you uncomfortable, but
this is he's
can't we just be free with one another?
That's
can't
fine,
we, Sean.
But this guy is gay for pay.
So basically, this is hung without all naked women.
He is whatever for pay. I think that's kind of the joke, that he doesn't know what he's getting into most of the time when he takes his insane job.
Well, he's sucking dicks. That's what he's getting into.
Well, he's not sucking them in this episode.
I
but
think
maybe
it,
later
well,
in the
just
series.
A pilot.
I think it's about what's
what
getting
I
into him.
What?
I said I think it's about what's getting into him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would like it to go in that direction, honestly. They're kind of working on the story arc of the first season right now. We're going to wrap on the pilot sometime next month, and then it'll be edited, and we'll be shopping it around, and we're all very excited about that.
Will we be able to see this?
Yeah, definitely. Sometime.
Just bringing a crew out here, so we'll be filming simulated sex scenes on your couch, Will.
You know what? I actually don't have all that much. I would rather them film a porno in my house than a regular movie, I think. I feel like I'd be easier with that. And now those L.A. condom laws with the porn, I got those condoms. I bought them.
Excellent, yes.
I'm all set.
When I look around your apartment, it just screams like high-class porno, so...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that brings me to a question... You should move to Los Angeles.
Me? Are you gonna bring this up right here, right now?
I'm gonna bring this up right here on the show. I'm putting you on the spot.
Come on, there's all these people listening. I don't want to talk
no
about
one
this
listening.
With you right now. I lived in LA for about a year and a half, and I didn't like it, so I left.
I didn't like the beautiful weather, the laid back lifestyle, lack of snow. You know, tell me when I can stop.
I didn't like any of that. Ah. I like being in cold, dark rooms by myself.
Yeah, with hurricanes and blizzards.
Yeah, all that. Maybe I will move back to LA. You know, I'm like wrapped up in all these projects in New York right now. Maybe. Just, you know, keep hassling me about it.
Everyone tweet at Maddie and tell her to come move to Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's going to be the goal of this episode. Back to you, WonCon. I recently wrote an article for you that I was very happy with, that I wrote in a fit of anger, because I work with these guys, and these guys, they're not film guys like us, and they're just like, they'll like, they claim that movies have no like emotions over them. They're like, oh, maybe I shed a tear at that movie, because someone at my job got mocked because he cried during Titanic or something, and I was the only one to come to this guy's defense, and I mentioned that I've cried at probably dozens upon dozens upon dozens of movies. And the older I get, the more I cry. So I wrote this article about this stigma about crying at movies, which people should go find on U1Can. And Sean actually had the great closing line of my article, which was, Sean...
Real men cry at the end of The Shawshank Redemption.
So,
It's true. I think it should be a bumper sticker.
I would use that. I would put that bumper sticker on my car.
Yeah.
We should make those as the official bumper stickers of Will Sean Podcast.
Real men cry at the end of The Shawshank Redemption. I like it.
But, so now that I put that article out there, I talked about how I cried at even, like, the movie Babe, you know, with the fucking pig.
That'll do, pig.
That pig makes me cry. How about you? Do you get emoji? Are you weeping at the end of, like, Cinema Paradiso? Do you get, Madeline, do you get emotionally, like, from a movie like that? You cry at a lot of things?
No, I don't. Not usually, at least. I'm kind of a robot. No. Well, it's weird because, like, the weirdest movies will, like, get under my skin. Like, there is this Yude Yamaguchi film. Yude Yamaguchi is, like, a splatter film, like, Japanese director. He makes, like, horrible horror movies. Like, he has this film called Tamami, the Baby's Curse, which is about a demon baby just killing people in a house. Like, he's that kind of director. But he did a movie called Meatball Machine, right?
Continue.
And anyhow, I went to see Meatball Machine at the Philadelphia Film Festival years ago, mm-hmm. and the theater is almost empty. And I'm like, come on, this movie is called Meatball Machine. How could you pass that up? So I'm watching the movie, and it's about, you know, this guy, this really shy Japanese guy, and there's this really shy Japanese girl he sees every day at work, and he's always like, oh, she's so cute and pretty, but he's too shy to talk to her, and she's too shy to talk to him. And then aliens come, and he's out, and he finds this weird thing, and it turns out it's actually a little alien spaceship, but he doesn't know it, and he's, like, out, and he gets in a fight. And the girl's there, and she's like, let me take care of you, let me, you know, fix you up, and takes him home, and then any other spaceship comes alive and takes over her body and turns her into a mutant. And the whole movie is about him trying to get her back.
Are you crying now?
You're getting emotional now.
I'm getting emotional just thinking about it.
So, everyone, Meatball Machine, if you want a good cry. It's right up there with Terms of Endearment.
So, yes.
No one else would ever cry at this movie because it is stupid and it is really gory and, like, but just the story of, like, them being mutants but still loving each other and never being able to be together just got to me.
So, whereas I always felt like I was probably a little embarrassed that I cried at Babe of all movies because it's about a pig, but no.
But this takes the cake.
Oh, okay, good. You cried at Babe.
I didn't, but everyone does.
Shawshank Redemption? Did you cry at Shawshank Redemption?
No.
Okay.
No quote.
That's more of a guy. That's a man cry.
A man cry? I think I could have a man cry.
You can make a man cry.
Yeah.
With your meatball machine.
I think you've made us cry. Well, you know what? Before we move on to the topics, I mean, I think everybody knows at this point, but why don't you tell us, do some plugs. Why don't you tell us the website and everything one more time?
Me?
Yeah, you.
You.
Oh, okay. Well, the website is uncans.com. So you, as in yourself. You won it, like I got an award, and then can, like the film festival in France, .com. Fluff has a Twitter. It's, I think, at Fluff TV, and then we also have a Facebook page if you want to come and like that. I don't know. What else can I plug?
That seems good to me.
What about your personal Twitter, which is an interesting little form of self-expression you got going there?
Oh, thanks, man. I'm at DVD Box Set. My personal Twitter is basically just my mind exploding constantly.
You describe it to me as kind of therapy.
Yeah. Twitter is my confidant. It's the person I talk to. So you'll get everything from, like, things that I think are funny, things that don't make any sense that I think are hilarious, my friends stealing my Twitter and tweeting things, and then links to, like, songs I'm working on or articles I'm writing or things that I think are brilliant. You know.
I have to ask one more question before we move on to the topic. So why is your Twitter handle at DVD Box Set?
Because I have a lot of DVDs, and I like them, and I've been using that username for a really long time. I think, okay, do you want the real story of how I got the name DVD Box Set?
No, I want you to continue to lie to
us.
Yeah,
keep lying. And cry while you do it.
All right, I'm going to cry and I'm going to lie right now. Here it comes. I was looking for a handle for IRC, and I was talking to a friend of mine, and she's like, well, I'll take notes on what you're talking about, and we'll figure out what your username should be from those notes. So I'm just talking about, like, stuff that I'm, like, interested in, and she took notes on everything, and the one thing I kept talking about was DVD box sets, and she's like, this has to be your username. And I was like, you are correct.
Makes sense.
I'm DVD box set because I talk about DVDs a lot.
Good story.
Well... well, let's move on to the topics, and, Oscar nominee Christoph Waltz hosted SNL this week. I wanted to bring this up because last week we really shit on Justin Bieber and his inability to host SNL, so I was curious, I don't know if you got a chance to watch, Maddie, but if you did, how did you think he did?
I did. I watched it earlier today. I thought that he was fantastic. I think he was better than the show.
I agree. I thought that he was great in every skit. I thought some of the skits were good ideas in theory, but they didn't quite pay off, but he was solid at
all.
Am
I the only one that thinks he didn't do a good job?
Yes.
I thought he was reading completely off the teleprompter. He was stiff. He seemed completely out of place. He seemed to not know where he was at half the time. He always seemed disconnected from what was going on in all his sketches. He's very charming. I liked him. He also disappeared for large portions of the show.
No, he didn't. He disappeared. He was in... There was only one skit he wasn't in, and he wasn't in Update, but no one's ever in Update.
I just didn't... It didn't do it for me. And even his opening monologue, half of it was just this lame soft shoe.
Every
musical
monologue's
number.
A lame soft
no,
shoe.
No, I didn't think he was that great. I'm sorry. I thought... I was watching it, and he just felt, like, lost up there. So,
yeah.
That's my opinion. I didn't think it was a great episode.
About the opening monologue, that I kind of... It was pretty flat, and I think my eyes glazed over, and, like, my tongue was, like, hanging out of my mouth, and I don't even remember him having an opening monologue. But there were a couple... Like I loved the sketch where he was the creepy guy in the office who...
That was the only good one that I liked.
That was fantastic.
That was great.
That was the only thing I liked.
I liked the Jesus one also.
Yeah, but you know what? The pre-recorded segments, I always give
They're
a little...
better.
Those are a little bit different than, like, the live on
so
stage.
So, are you saying you don't count them?
No, they count, but it's not, like... I'm thinking about the live sketches he did on the show, and I was sort of reading reviews, and everyone's like, A episode. I'm like, this is not an A episode.
Maybe also the bar was so low from the week before.
And
with
I would read these. I'd read these articles that were reviewing the episode where they gave it an A, and they're picking apart every sketch, and they still gave it an A. I'm like, what are you kidding me? This is you're undermining yourself. Whatever. I didn't like the episode.
Well, Christoph Waltz, he's nominated for an Oscar, and this weekend is the Oscars. I have not been this excited for the Oscars in a while because I think of the six big categories, which I would say are director, picture, and the four acting categories. Three of them, I think, are coin tosses. Three of them, I think, are up in the air, which is... So it's not as predictable as usual.
Up in the air is nominated again?
I knew you were going to make that joke. Madeline, what do you think of the Oscars?
I merely do not...
You don't think about them at all. You don't watch.
No, the Oscars are the most boring, predictable things. They're just these like clean adult movies that people can feel good and smart about seeing and liking and discussing. They're not great art for the most part. It's just studio fodder.
I always think a lot of good. Maybe the winner is something like that, like the King's Speech. But I think a lot of good films. Get nominated. They might not win, but I'm at least glad to see. Like, I'm glad to see, like, in a more nominated. And even though Zero Dark Thirty is a studio film, it's a really well done studio film.
Listen, yeah. There's no Meatball Machine nominated this year, but I'm sure you can find something you like.
But you know, I think you and I, two of our favorite movies from last year, I think they were both in our top tens, were Looper and Cabin in the Woods, which are a little more genre-oriented things that were really phenomenal movies, but they're not the kind of films that ever get recognized.
No, they're not. And that's... I mean, what you said just there is one of my big problems with the Oscars, is there's a kind of film that gets recognized.
Of course.
And if you're not in that mold, that, like, specific mold that people are told is good, then you don't get recognition. And... I think that's horrible. But I will also say that you mentioned Amour, and I'm thrilled that Amour is you know, nominated, that people are seeing it, because it's Michael Haneke, and he's been one of my favorite directors for so many years, and his career has been phenomenal and all that, and to see that now he's, you know, being watched by so many people, that's awesome.
It
bring more attention to the American version of Funny Games.
Oh, hell yeah.
So you're not going to watch, then? Sunday night, you're just going to...
Oh, I'll watch them. I'll watch them in a bar, like, while I'm drinking.
You'll watch them ironically.
You know. No, it's not ironic. It's just passive.
I mean, do you like Seth MacFarlane at all? I mean, he's hosting. I have no idea what your thoughts are on him.
He's charming. That's all I got.
Okay. You know what? I'm actually kind of excited about, Sean. The Bond tribute. because I'm a big James Bond movie fan. The rumor was they were going to have to try to have all six Bonds there, but apparently Pierce Brosnan is the guy who does not want anything to do with it.
Shock. You would imagine that'd be Sean Connery.
I would have assumed. But Shirley Bassey's going to be there singing. Also, Adele. I'm excited that Adele's performing Skyfall. I like Adele. I like that song.
Are you sure it's Adele? Are you sure Seth MacFarlane's not going to do his own musical tribute to all the Bond songs?
That would be phenomenal, actually. If Seth MacFarlane did a medley of all 22 of the Bond songs.
I'm nervous about this Seth MacFarlane thing. I think he's going to... I think he's going to be a little too cute for his own good. We'll see. I'm up. The jury's out on how I feel about Seth MacFarlane hosting.
Well, we'll be talking about this big time next week. But we had done an Oscar prediction show a while back, and there are a couple of categories that we weren't super confident in, or at least I wasn't. I just wanted to address them really quick. Bear with us, Madeline, or chime in. But I know you, or listen to this passively, whatever you
keep drinking. Have another beer.
But
okay, I will.
One is director, and you know, I would love Michael Haneke to win. He's not going to. I assume
they gave it to European last year. Then that's it for next 10 years. No more Europeans.
That's the quota.
They gave it to Roman Polanski in '98. That was it. Now this last year they gave it to Havanicius and.
So that's it. No, Europeans are out.
Yeah.
But Asians? I think Ang Lee's
He already got one, too. And he's pretty much American.
Spielberg's already got...
Spielberg is Spielberg. Spielberg's in a different world.
So you think Spielberg's going to win?
I think he is.
I think Ang Lee's going to win.
You think so?
Yeah. I think that I'm hearing no Spielberg buzz, and I think people really look at Life of Pi as such a technical achievement. I'm not a big fan of the movie.
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was... I agree with you 100%.
But it's such a technical achievement. I think Ang Lee, and I think the Academy... You know, they've always kind of been a little hard on Spielberg, even though he's won twice, and I think Ang Lee is going to win.
Interesting.
I'll
look forward to taking your money on Sunday.
Any thoughts, Madeline?
I'm trying to silently bring up the list of directors so that I can.
Ang Lee, Steven Spielberg, Michael Haneke,
Ben Zeitlin, and David O. Russell.
Yeah.
I don't know. I want Haneke to take it. I think that would be amazing. I think he has a shot, actually. I think that like Lincoln's going to take everything else, and Argo will take Best Picture. Those are my predictions. Now I'm out. Done.
Well, you know what? I'm secretly hoping for an Ang Lee Spielberg split, and Haneke sneaks in there. But I'll tell you what I do think Amore is going to win, and I kind of hinted that I might feel this way on the Oscar episode we did. But I think Emmanuel Riva is going to beat Jennifer Lawrence. I think it's going to be the upset of the night.
Interesting.
Any thoughts, Sean?
I don't think Lawrence has a shot. I think you're right about that one.
I think I'd be okay either way. The logic there would be Emmanuel Riva's old, Jennifer Lawrence is young. She has a whole career to win. And
by the way, both of them and Jessica Chastain, all three of them, if any of them won, I couldn't complain. They're all brilliant in completely different ways. I honestly do think, and when I saw more, I thought Emmanuel Riva, I said, I'm not going to see a better female performance than this. And you know what? I got to go with my gut. My gut tells me she's going to win. I would rather lose my money in the Oscar pool betting on my gut than not go with my gut and then end up losing. You know, so that's... But Riva... And one more I wanted to bring up, and it involves our SNL host, supporting actor. The nominees were Alan Arkin, Phil Seymour Hoffman. Neither of them have a shot. I think it's a coin toss between De Niro, Tommy Lee Jones, and Christoph Waltz.
Well, you know, the Vegas odds on Christoph Waltz when the nominations came out were 25-1, and now it's even money on Christoph Waltz.
Well, you know, he won the BAFTA, and he won the Golden Globe. De Niro seems to be the favorite now from a lot of the predictors, but he hasn't won a single award leading up to the Oscars.
No. That was my prediction, was De Niro, but that... I think it's going to be a toss-up between Tommy Lee Jones and Christoph Waltz.
I think Christoph Waltz wins it because Tommy Lee Jones is a fucking grump. And Christoph Waltz, I think they
He's
like...
charming and...
Man, you ever see Christoph Waltz give these acceptance speeches? He does the same... Sean does a great...
And I got a phone call from Quentin, and he asked me to come with him on this journey. And then, with the script in hand, it was our map. And Quentin, he took my hand, and we had a shovel. That was the camera. And we went into the Old West to make a film about slavery. Yeah, I could just listen to Christoph Waltz. I could listen to Christoph Waltz give an acceptance speech and Denzel Washington land an airplane for hours.
Oh, he's beautiful. That man is beautiful.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, moving along. Those are the last minute Oscar picks. And next week we'll find out who won the Oscar pool, and I'll be yelling and cursing about something, I'm sure, from
Quetzalcoatl
the show.
Quetzalcoatl Wallace.
Yeah. Oh, if the little, and like I keep saying, if the little girl from Beasts of the Southern Wild wins, then that fucking bitch is going to be the enemy of the podcast. I want nothing to...
That is so mean.
See, I don't like that movie, and the more...
I didn't see it.
I'd be curious to know your thoughts. I didn't like it.
Moving on.
Moving on. Madeline, I believe you are half Jewish?
I identify as full Jew.
Okay, for some reason I thought, I don't know, maybe I'm saying things about you I shouldn't be saying.
He's calling you a mudblood.
Oh my god, he's been making up these horrible lies about me on the podcast, pronouncing my name wrong, calling me a half-blood.
Well, Sean is going to give us a little bit of Sean's Jewish history. You that's probably know this, recognizing
being
as full
a half,
Jew.
Being a half-Jew that identifies as full Jew. Well, this weekend is the Jewish holiday of Purim, which, as you all know, is the Jewish Halloween slash Jewish Mardi Gras. It is one of our three official drinking holidays, where there's actually a rabbinical precept that you should drink until you can no longer tell the difference between essentially good and evil. That's not exactly what it is, but it's good enough for this purpose. And it is celebrating the events that took place in the Book of Esther, where, as you all know, Esther, the demure Jewish maiden, saved the Jewish people from extinction during the reign of King Ahasuerus, or Xerxes the First.
Much like yourself, Madeline.
Yes, exactly. And she, using her feminine wiles and her quick thinking and her sexual charms, she convinced the king to not let his vizier, Haman, carry forward on a plan he had to exterminate all the Jews. So the order was given, the Jews were allowed to fight back, and victory was ours.
She used her sexual charm.
Yeah.
So
and
she
her was, brain.
She was the ultimate SGL for me.
Then. Semitic good looks, yeah?
Yeah.
So she, it's actually a kind of fascinating story. If you read it, it's one of the last holidays to be added into the, like, it's one of the last Jewish canon holidays, if you will. And it is one of two Jewish holidays that is not mentioned in the Torah specifically. It was a later addition.
And it's one of the more fun ones, and it's a
yeah,
later
so dress
edition.
Up, so you get drunk, you eat little triangle pastries called Hamantaschen.
Are you, recognizing full Jew, Madeline Kessner, are you going to be celebrating Purim?
Yeah, I'm celebrating Purim right now.
Oh, you're drinking, till you can't tell the difference between good and evil. I say you get in a full-ass costume and go to a bar on Sunday and go watch the Oscars.
What's the specific costume there?
Any. It's just costume. Just dress up.
Can I dress up as Balti from Super?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to do that. I'm going to do it.
That's actually pretty
happy
good.
Purim.
Happy Purim. Fuck you all. So that's what's going to be going on. And the reading of the Book of Esther, the Megillah, happens on Saturday night and Sunday morning. And so, yeah, that's what's that.
Well, this is great. I'm all for this holiday. I'm all for Jewish women dressing up and drinking and forgetting the difference between good
you're
and evil.
I think you're supposed to give charity and gifts too, but fuck that noise.
Give charity to this Gentile. I want Jewish women giving me charity.
Excellent. Will you'll be the poor and pity fuck.
I would love that. I bought all these condoms.
I
got all these condoms.
They're triangle shaped.
Jewish women, come to me this Purim.
He bought Hummin condoms.
Oh, but you know what? I'm going to be watching the Oscars.
No, the Oscars at 4 o'clock. It's Sunday, so it's Saturday night and Sunday morning.
Saturday night, Jewish women, come to me.
There's going to be plenty. Any Jewish organization is going to be having a Purim party on Saturday night. Just wear a token costume, and you'll be able to get in and booze it up.
This is pretty good.
Yeah.
Speaking of Jewish women,
well,
one of my favorite TV shows, we talk about it all the time on the podcast.
Game of Thrones.
The other one.
Breaking Bad.
The other one.
The Americans.
Mad Men.
Mad Men.
Girls.
Ah, yes, that one.
Oh, gross.
So, it's well into its second season. We haven't talked about it much this season, and I think it hasn't lost a step. I fucking still love the show. I love the characters. I think it's a really real show. I love where it's been going this season. However, I'm running into a lot of people who don't like it as much. They think that the main character, Lena Dunham's character of Hannah, is become really unlikable, and they just don't... They hate her, and because of this, they're starting to hate the whole series. And I gotta ask you, Madeline, why you gotta hate?
I hate Girls because it is an empty show, and it condones terrible behavior of young people.
How do you feel that way?
You sound like an old crotchety person.
I know I do, but I also I don't. People act. Hannah is a very empty and self-important character.
Right. Yes.
And it would be one thing if that was interesting, because like I read an article recently that was talking about how like Hannah is a bad person. Hannah is a bad character, but that doesn't make a bad show. In fact, one of my absolute favorite shows is about a horrible person, and that's Breaking Bad.
Yes.
Walter White is an evil man. He is not a good man. And Hannah is a bad person, but the problem is Hannah's really boring. She doesn't do anything. She doesn't say anything. It's a show about watching someone be obsessed with herself and go on these trivial little like nothing adventures that don't say or do anything. And well, I guess in some ways that is a good representation of my generation.
Exactly.
But,
it's you. You're Hannah.
I am not Hannah.
You're more of a Shoshana.
Hannah. You're right. No.
Well, okay, do you feel that same way about the other characters though?
I feel that way about all the characters, I guess. Not specifically, like I have problems with each one of them. And most of it is that they don't learn, they don't change, they don't as a viewer don't get anything.
I disagree. I think Hannah has gone from entitled narcissist in season one to a more confident version of that character in season
self-absorbed. Two. Self-absorbed. I think in season two, she's faking it a lot. She thinks that if she puts on the airs, if she goes through the motions, like the way she threw the dinner party, or has to have that confidence with Patrick
Wilson.
I was going to say Warburton. But
I think the dinner party episode was actually a fantastic episode where it showed a little bit of change in all the characters. It showed some pain. It focused on everybody, both male and female characters on the show. I guess I just don't understand, why didn't you feel this way about the first season? Because you kind of liked it the first season. Because I feel she's the exact... It's the exact same kind of show.
And that's actually my problem. I enjoyed the first season because I thought it was going somewhere. I thought that there would be a conclusion, that there would be some sort of development from episode one.
But she has changed.
First episode.
She's moved on from a relationship with Adam. She looks at that differently.
How has she learned from her relationship with Adam?
Okay, see, here's what bothers
me. You and your learning.
I like to see characters develop.
But here's the thing. I think they are developing, albeit maybe on a slower, thus realer level. But I don't hear these complaints about shows like Curb Your Enthusiasm or Veep. I mean, Larry David never grew as a person.
But Larry David puts himself out there as... Almost, but Larry David is like a clown. He's like Charlie Chaplin, you know.
Yeah.
He's a clown that finds himself in situations.
But I'm saying he's equally considered not likable.
But it's different because Girls puts itself out there. Girls puts itself out there as a story about these people and their lives and their growth. Curb Your Enthusiasm never pretends to be anything more than what it is.
Well, Sean, do you think that there's been...
I'm very ambivalent about Girls. I enjoy it. I think some of the slice of life aspects to it are interesting. To me, it's basically sex. It's a less sexy version of Sex in the City. It's basically Sex in the City for poor people.
For poor people?
Yeah, it's like poor girls. It's sexy.
Okay, well, here's another big problem I have with the show.
The problem you're about to say is the problem with every television show that takes place in New York. You're going to say that it's, they have this apartment. How is she affording this apartment? How is she, because you and I know as well as anyone how expensive New York is.
Mm-hmm. But a lot of my problem right now as a human being is that I can't afford to live in New York City, and everything I do is in New York City. The only thing I could afford is like a closet in Bushwick, nowhere near a train, and that would be miserable. And I would have a horrible life. I wouldn't be able to go out. I wouldn't be able to have friends. And yet a show that is supposed to be, which I'm frequently told is a representation of me and my life and my generation, is something that I could never have.
Well, move to Brooklyn.
There's a conceit of television. I mean, like, look at Friends. I mean, I know that's more broad of a sitcom than, although they're both comedies. But, I mean, how did anybody afford to live like they lived? I mean, the apartments they
had. He's an archaeologist or paleontologist.
Yeah,
made that crazy.
We were never really in his apartment. We were in the apartment of, like, the out-of-work actor.
Yeah, and the stoner.
And the chef and the, you know, I mean, it's like,
But when was Friends a show about people finding themselves in New York City?
Friends was a show about people.
You don't remember the episode, the one where they find themselves in the city?
Oh, yeah. They found themselves in the city every episode, didn't they? Because they were there.
But you know what? I think in the 90s, that's how people viewed Friends. I really do. I think the world has changed in the way we, and the different entertainment we have has changed, which is why we don't think about that now. But I think when Friends first came on, that's how it was sold. It's like, these people are singles living in the city, and they're finding themselves, and they're growing, and they're getting married, and they're having children. And I think Friends absolutely did that, but it did it in a more sitcom-y way, and it was the 90s, and it was...
Fuck the 90s.
You know... I mean, that's it. But here's the thing. Let me get to an issue with girls that maybe you might actually back me up on this one. And I do this to myself because I love the show. It's one of my favorite shows on TV right now. And I always read, like, the AV Club or the Entertainment Weekly write-ups after the episode and see what other people are thinking. And I always make the fucking mistake of going to the message boards. And I really shouldn't do this because who posts things on message boards? Just awful trolling people.
Nope.
And the thing that they complain about the most is the nudity. They complain endlessly about the nudity. And it drives me crazy. They are so mortified. There was recently this episode of Girls called One Man's Trash, where she has this long, extended, sexual couple of days with Patrick Wilson. And it's an interesting episode. It's a love it or hate it episode of Girls, and there was a lot of nudity. She was topless playing ping pong with them. They were having a lot of sex, and people went crazy. And they were like, "I don't want to see this. This is horrible. Why is there so much nudity on the show? Why is there so much nudity?" And it drives me insane because these same people don't complain about all the nudity on True Blood or Game of Thrones.
Where
that nudity is far more gratuitous than in the nudity on Girls. I feel that finding nudity on Girls is very natural. I have been in those relationships where we've just woken up and we've been kind of half naked around an apartment. It's very real and very natural. And these people, they just don't want to see Lena Dunham because she's not this ideal beauty. And, you know, yeah, she's got questionable tattoos. And they don't want to see. They're so offended by Lena Dunham's naked body. Oh, poor you. You had to see Lena Dunham's tits again. Oh, boo-hoo. And that is why you people who complain about the nudity on Girls are the enemy of the podcast. Fuck you. Just watch Lena Dunham have sex with people already and shut up. And guess what? If you're that offended, if she's that disgusting to you, then you don't even have to watch the fucking show. I can't deal with this. I can't deal with it. Ugh.
I agree with you 100%. I love seeing her body. I think she is gorgeous. I love that she has the self-confidence to just, like, take off her clothes on television, on HBO. I think she, in that aspect, is incredible. I wish she had a better brain.
And, well, you know,
her body is wonderful, though.
Well, here's the thing about her body. Once again, it's not, let's take another show on HBO. Like, it's not like Anna Paquin's body, I guess.
Her
it's not...
body is natural.
It's real.
It's not a body that's been chosen. She has not been chosen for her body. Like, her body is just her body. She's just Lena Dunham. That's who she is, and she's naked.
You know what bothers me?
People have bodies under their clothes. Everyone does. And not every single one is what we're told bodies are supposed to be. Bodies are like the Oscars.
here I think is where people respond. Here's where I think people are upset. It's because
Lena Dunham's body is meatball machine.
It is meatball machine. She, I think people get upset because she plays this game of, like, hide-and-go-seek.
That was terrible. Continue, sorry.
No, I think what people get upset is because she plays this bullshit game, which is she can get naked, but the Allison Williams and Zsozsa Mamet, who are more...
No, Allison Williams, I don't think, wants to get naked.
Right, but I think that's where it draws attention to the fact...
But here's the thing. I think it says something about Allison Williams' character, because if you notice in this last week's episode, I know you didn't see it, there's a scene with her where she's getting out of bed after having sex.
It draws attention.
Herself,
yeah.
In her, but her character is this type A neurotic personality that probably is not comfortable. She's the more physically beautiful, maybe, but she's not comfortable with her body, whereas the girl who's not supposed to be as physically beautiful, I guess, is. And
but, I think that's kind of what pisses off viewers, too. It's like, but they tune in and all they see is Lena Dunham naked and there's these other beautiful women on the
you
show.
You know what, though? Oh, my God. You know what? All these people who were complaining about seeing Lena Dunham naked...
I have something about that,
well, all these people
actually.
Who were complaining about seeing Lena Dunham naked, all of them are having sex with people who probably don't even look as good as Lena Dunham. I mean, that's the thing. I find it highly unlikely that she's so much better than... And people... that she's so much worse than the people these people are having sex with. If she's good enough for me to have sex with, she's good enough for you to have sex with. And you know what? The other thing, in the Patrick Wilson episode, all these people are like, oh, why would he sleep with her? Why would he sleep with her? I'll tell you why he'd sleep with her. Because she was a girl half his age, hitting on him. He's recently separated.
And she's there.
Yeah, of course he would have sex with her. Well, I apologize, Madeline. What were you going to say?
I think that the idea that people don't like the show because Lena gets naked and no one else does, that's really misogynistic in a lot of ways, especially when discussing the other female characters. Now, if it was, why isn't everyone on the show naked because in real life people get naked? Now, that's something, but it's, why do I have to look at this frumpy girl naked and I can't look at the beautiful girl naked? I'm offended by that.
Well, you pissed at me or you pissed at the line of reasoning?
The line of reasoning.
Okay.
You're fine.
I'm blameless.
Well, you're not necessarily agreeing with that, but you're putting yourself
right.
In the mentality of the
yes.
Trolls online. Fuck you, trolls. You're the enemy of the podcast. You know what? I want to force all these trolls to have to like go down on Lena Dunham. That's the penance I want.
But also, it is part of her character. It's discussed several times in the show that she's just really comfortable taking her clothes off. And most people aren't.
Well, I'm glad on this point.
I shower clothed, so...
You're a never nude. Sean is a never nude.
True story.
But, well, I'm glad on this point you and I agree, Madeline.
Uh-huh, me too.
Before we get out of here, before we ramp things up, I always like throwing one little weird thing, and... this was brought to my attention by you, Sean. I thought this was very interesting. There's a town in Ireland that is allowing moderate drunk driving. I guess everybody is so drunk
yeah.
there in this town in Ireland that they're like, okay, you could be moderately drunk.
Because it's rural Ireland, and that's all you do. Your whole social life is based around the pub. It's like living in Wisconsin. You just have these long county roads. You can't really hit anything. And so if you get a couple drinks in, you can drive home. You're good.
So my question to you, Madeline, when are you moving to Ireland?
Tomorrow?
Yes, so you can do moderate drunk driving.
Do I get to take my car with me?
Yeah, I mean, you have to ship it, but...
And it's, no, the UK, you got the steering wheel on the other side, so not only are you drunk, you got to figure out how to drive on the other side of the road.
I mostly just want to run people over.
A lot of sheep. You can hit a sheep. So, yeah, this is fascinating, and I think we could all take a lesson from this, but I think the country at large is not happy with this county.
This one down, because now everyone's like,
hey,
we wanna...
if they could do it, why can't we drive drunk?
Now, let me ask you this. I teased you earlier trying to get you to come to L.A., and I half apologize for that, but if I could get Mayor Villaraigosa to allow moderate drunk driving in Los Angeles, would you come back here?
Probably not, no. I think it's more likely that I'd be killed by a drunk driver than be a drunk driver.
And he's only mayor for like another 6 weeks, so...
Well, that's why now's the time
to duck
just...
legislation.
Yeah. Okay, well, there we go.
Yeah, another episode.
Madeline, thank you so much for coming on the show.
You're welcome. I hope I was good.
Before we go, let's plug everything one more time, because that's what we do. We just plug things to death here.
Okay. UNCan.com. Cannes, like the French Film Festival. Fluff is a television pilot. Look it up on Facebook. We're going to have another Kickstarter going for editing soon. So if you like it, you should get involved in that. I am at DVD Box Set on Twitter. My Twitter is real weird. And that'll also be a place where you can find the album that I'm currently recording, because I'm also a musician. Why not just throw that in at the end there? I make music under the name Eric Liefensen. Eric was a 1,000-year-old Viking spirit that was beamed into my head. So yeah, we make music together. It's pretty rad.
Okay.
By the way, seriously, follow her on Twitter. You're gonna follow her, and you're gonna be like, "What the fuck did I do?" But then, something really great will be tweeted, and you'll be like, "This is why." And then
something sexy.
She has on occasion tweeted sexy bruise marks on her legs. I've seen. So you know that it got me going. So it might for you as well.
Oh, wait, I have one more. I tweeted earlier today there's a director, Nacho Villalondo. He did Time Crimes, which is a time travel movie, and he was just in ABC's A Death. But anyhow, I tweeted, I have a tattoo on my ankle of a drawing from the movie Time Crimes. It's like a little diagram of time travel. And so you got like a sexy picture of my exposed leg with a tattoo. And the director saw it and he liked it so much he made it his avatar on Twitter.
Nice.
There you go.
I met a director this weekend on the ABCs of Death.
Oh, which one? John Schnaub.
Schnaub, yeah.
The Metalocalypse guy. He's awesome.
I'm going to try.
He's so funny. You should get him on the show.
I'm going to try. Yeah, talking to him this
weekend.
I have
a friend who's been working with him on a screenplay.
Put a word in.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but I hope I was allowed to say that. I won't say anything else.
No need to even put a word in, because I have someone who's sending me his email, and we had a conversation. I'm going to try to book him. Hopefully we get him. I think he'll be a great guest.
Okay.
Sean, do the thing where you plug things that you plug.
Well, if you guys are listening to this on Saturday or early Sunday morning, I'm going to be giving an opera talk at the Last Bookstore in downtown Los Angeles at 1 p.m. before the Oscars. It's on Spring and between 4th and 5th. And it's going to be on Wagner's The Flying Dutchman, and it'll be fun and hilarious. So if you can make it, you should attend.
I've seen Sean do a talk on this, and, you know, at first I got to admit, I was like, am I going to like an opera talk? And it was great. Sean did a great job, and you should go. But don't talk to him too much afterwards, because he has to race out of there and get to my place for the
exactly.
Oscars.
Exactly. Beyond that, I got my book on Amazon Kindle, Triumvirs, Triumvirs. And you can follow me on Twitter and Facebook at TheSeanDavid. Also on Instagram and Letterpress.
That Letterpress. I'm at The Real Will Link, and you could also listen to me every Tuesday at 4 p.m. on The PM Show with Larry Minetti at crntalk.com. I review movies. I talk about the Oscars. I bullshit with Larry Minetti. This past week, I ripped A Good Day to Die Hard to fucking shreds. So go listen to that. And I always plug it, so why not? I have articles as well on You Won Can, like the city in France. And I actually haven't written anything in a while. I've been so busy. I will write you something soon, Madeline.
Yay.
Maybe a post-Oscars roundup.
Maybe I'll do that, because I know you care so much about the Oscars.
Hey, I'll post it. That sounds great.
Hey, look at that.
I say you just start watching Vampire Diaries, knowing nothing about it, and write your own write-ups, jumping in at season 4.
Yeah, I should count.
Wait, do the uppers version, because Greg gets drunk and reviews it, so just like
do a lot of cocaine.
Lot of crack.
I'm gonna do much like Hannah on Girls. I'm gonna do a lot of coke, and then I'm gonna review Vampire Diaries. It's
perfect.
Going to be awesome. On the show next week, we have Janelle Riley. She works for Backstage, and she has interviewed everyone, including
like every nominee.
Yeah, all the nominees. So she's gonna come on to do our post-Oscar breakdown with us, and probably give us a little bit of dirt on some of these people. Maybe not dirt, but some insight.
A little bit of schmutz.
Yeah, it'll be good. She's gonna be great. I'm really excited about this. And then the week after that, we have Michael. Oh, why do I not read my own handwriting? Michael Dugan. And He runs an essay show, and he runs a brand new essay show called Tattletales, and he's going to tell us all about that, and maybe about a certain podcaster who's going to be performing at it.
What?
Is it going to be Mark Maron?
Yeah, it's going to be Mark Maron.
Okay.
We're plugging for him now.
Fucking Mark Maron.
That son of a bitch.
He needs all the help he can get.
Well, once again, Madeline Kessner.
Or whatever.
Or whatever your name is.
You got it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For coming on. And?
I think we're finished.
We're finished.